It was the dawn of the third age of mankind. 10 years after the Earth-Minbari War, the Babylon Project was dream giving form. Its goal to prevent another war by creating a place where humans and aliens could work out their differences peacefully. It's a port of call, home away from home, for diplomats, hustlers, entrepreneurs, and wanderers. Humans and aliens wrapped in 2,500,000 tons of spinning metal, all alone in the night. It can be a dangerous place, but it's our last, best hope for peace. This is the story of Last of the Babylon Stations. The year is 2258. The name of the place is Babylon 5.
Commander Sinclair, I must tell you the Centauri Republic will not be taking this lightly.
Now, Ambassador Malari, let me tell you, we've got this station just how we want it.
But I must tell you, Commander Sinclair, we seem to have a problem with the mullet.
All right, lights, camera, action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, man, how you going?
Thank you. Welcome to, of course, the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, coming to you live from Babylon 5. I wish we could be at that station, at the Zocalo, or who knows, maybe in Garibaldi's office checking out some Looney Tunes from Warner Brothers. This is one of the many things that he did, didn't he? Well, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina on the Gold Coast of Australia for episode number 234 of the podcast. That's right, we're doing Babylon 5 Season 1 Signs and Portents. We're going to be looking at a series which I was late to really getting into as a fan, and I'd seen a little bit back in the 90s when it was on late night TV here in Australia. It was on a very, very late, like 10:30 at night or something like that, on one of the many stations. And I think it jumped between two, actually, back in the day. But we're going to really get into this great series, which is a love letter to all science fiction, of course, from Joe Straczynski, a man that's, you know, really created some of the greatest pop culture in our time. And being involved in a lot of it too. So, you know, and we'll get into a little bit of that, but more of what this is going to be about is me rewatching this great series, Babylon 5. I do it once a year. It's the same with Dune and, of course, Lord of the Rings. They're three things that I just have to experience each year, because each time I watch them, or in this case, you know, definitely watch, but the other one's reading the novels and, of course, reading the series. Of whether it's Dune or, of course, Tolkien's massive fantasy, is just getting the different layers that I get from reading those. And, of course, in this case, what Joe has put together is this massive smorgasbord of heroes' journeys in this Babylon 5 universe, and we're going to get into that tonight. This introduction, which is what Season 1 really is. It's introducing the world, giving us an idea of the characters, and exactly what some of the issues are going to be coming up, you know, the red herrings, those that we're going to see set up, you know, the real conflicts that are going to be coming up in future seasons, particularly when it pays off in the Shadow War, the Vorlons coming in, of course, and the Shadow themselves, and, you know, the aftermath of that as well. And, of course, the Earth and Minbari, you know, the conflict has happened 10 years before, and all that sort of stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about that, mainly focusing on, again, Season 1 and, you know, some great episodes, really setting up the great characters, of course, in this saga. And you've got to hand it to someone who knows not only as a great science fiction, obviously, fan and writer, and just somebody that really likes story. You can see that Straczynski's done an amazing job here, giving us a novel for television. And I was surprised even at the time that we get such a long series, but it's beloved not only by the people that watch it, but the people that created it as well. So sit back and relax, folks, as we head to, of course, Babylon 5 Season 1 here on the podcast.
G'day, man. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network,
where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
All right, on tonight's news here, we're going to talk about something that Chad Stahelski's been talking about. There's, of course, Henry Cavill in Highlander. Yeah, it is something they've been talking about for a while. He is in the reboot, and he's going to be playing Connor McLeod, of the Claire McLeod, the immortal Scotsman that, of course, what the Highlander franchise is named after. But one of the things he's been talking about is he's going to be doing something along the lines of John Wick, where they basically put this huge, massive franchise together. Now, obviously, John Wick has expanded out into a film with Ana de Armas in it, and there's also another one, the TV show The Continental, and of course numerous John Wicks. We're already talking about John Wick 5 now as well. So with Henry Cavill coming in to play, you know, the timeless warrior himself, Connor McLeod, they're looking at this being more about an Immortals franchise, which really it's been before, we know, because of course we got the great TV show with, of course, Duncan McLeod of the Clan McLeod. So this is a real chance for it to shine, folks, and a reboot could easily be part of the old. You know, this could be just a new Immortal. But that's where I think things are going to really be unexpected and expected at the same time. Because back on the TV show, they really, really looked at every angle of what an Immortal can go through. So what's great about this too is something that, you know, I did obviously earlier in the year. I looked at Highlander and I looked at pretty much all of the franchise as a whole. So I've done seasons 1 and 2, but very soon I'll be doing season 3. And if I can get them together, I'm going to try and get Kevin the Radio Nerd Reisel and, of course, Sensei Andy Sloan, the locations master on, of course, Seacouver and all those different things. And he's a huge fan of particularly the first episode of season 1, The Samurai. And I am too. It's a great episode, but season 3 is a real kickstart for any wanting to watch the series, even though you have to watch seasons 1 and 2, folks, as well. But season 3 is gold. It's a little bit like Babylon 5. Season 3 is really where things pay dirt as well. But with Henry Cavill and this being a big franchise, I'm willing to bet we'll get a TV show again as well with The Highlander.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about Deep Thought. And Deep Thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. Who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
Here we go, folks, here to chat about Babylon 5, a science fiction space opera, which was created by J. Michael Straczynski and came out from a test pilot movie which aired on the February 22nd, 1993. Of course, this is a Warner Brothers one, and it was called Babylon 5, The Gathering. After that was a success, of course, it was time to get a whole season of television out there, and that's what we're here to talk about tonight. We're talking about the first season, Season 1, Signs and Portents. And we're going to look at exactly what that's all about tonight. So Season 1 aired in 1994 after the success of Babylon 5, The Gathering, a TV movie pilot, where we have now Commander Sinclair, who's the hero of the Mimbari War, and he's troubled by the idea that he can't actually remember the events of the war. In the war's last day, as he was captured by the Mimbari. That's all he knows. Those supported, of course, by Mimbari Ambassador Delenn, who secretly got her own idea, and she's a member of the ruling Grey Council, the Mimbari themselves. Other Mimbari remain completely distrustful of him. The Narn Ambassador Jakar also presses him about ideas and concessions from their overlords, the Centauri Republic, who still look over their planet in amongst time when they were slaves to that empire. The Centauri ambassador, Londo Malari, also finds an ally in a man by the name of Mr. Morden, who gives him the ability to strike back at the Narn. And then, of course, there's the xenophobic groups that are on Earth who challenge, of course, the idea of humanity having a tolerance for all aliens. And of course, it comes down to, from here, the culmination of everything in Season 1 comes, of course, at the end, where we have the assassination of Earth's main president, of course, in this, and that is, of course, President Santiago. And this is where things really get interesting, of course, for Babylon 5 itself. And, of course, where things are going to go in the series, in the second season and beyond. So it was an interesting opening to, you know, a show that is, without a doubt, probably the best science fiction that's ever been put to TV. You know, there's different shows that have had, you know, great first seasons, and, you know, this is one where it's a bit of a slow burn in parts but really does kick into gear. So let's have a chat about first what Babylon 5 is all about. So Babylon 5 takes place between the years 2257 and 2262, and it's a future where Earth has basically become a unified government, an Earth government that has now got technology as far as like things like FTL, so faster than light travel, and using jump gates to use that. It's kind of like it's a wormhole technology, if you like. This is a little bit like hyperspace in the Star Wars films, that sort of idea. So things are quick, things are fast, and they can get places. Now, there's colonies within those systems, and they all make up what we call Earth Alliance, which is basically the defense force, if you like. From here, of course, they've made their way around and met many different cultures out there in the universe itself too. One of those, of course, didn't really take too kindly to the Earthlings at all. Call, of course, the Mimbari. The Mimbari are this race that's been around for eons, but also one of the big parts is that they were technically and, of course, I think, you know, just as a race, far advanced of what Earth is and with humanity. And, of course, from here, this is where, of course, tensions lie. So 10 years before the series takes place, Earth and the Mimbari are at war. So this is one of those things where, of course, basically Earth unknowingly killed the leader during a first contact situation. And this is where things just went awry and, of course, became war. But by the time we get to this place in, of course, 10 years later, Mimbari and the Earth have, of course, ceased fire and, of course, become friendly. And this is part of where we get in, of course, Babylon 5 itself and the tensions that are currently going on. And we, even then, even though the cultures of obviously the Mimbari and the Earthlings are now together in solidarity, they're still, you know, distrustful of one another. And that's part of what is, you know, interesting about this, how that plays out politically and just as people get along in the actual station itself. So other species, we've got the imperialist Centauri race, very Napoleonic. It's like an old empire that have sort of in their last days. You can think of that as the French in the time of Napoleon, or you can think of it as the British in the colonial days. But from there, you've also got the Narn, who are basically finally got independence from the Centauri Empire, where they're originally slaves to them. Then we've also got an older race, a powerful one, mysterious one called the Vorlons, which we don't know exactly what they look like because they wear these encounter suits. And inside, well, no one knows exactly what they look like. So there's many, many other races, the Drazi, Brikiri, Vri, Markab, Pakmara, and more. And all of these, of course, are part of the League of Non-Aligned Worlds, which is a political body which we see in the show itself too. There's also a very ancient race which comes into this called the Shadows. Now, we don't see too much of this in the first season, but of course, this becomes bigger and bigger as the show progresses. And of course, one of the big calling cards for the third season. Major, major part. So the station itself is a huge station. It's got, obviously, it spins on an axis so that it can create gravity inside the actual thing itself too for this habitat. It's a huge place, got massive hangars for, of course, many different, traveling spaceships and all that sort of stuff. And it's located in the Epsilon Eridani system. And this is at the fifth Langrenian point of the fictional planet. Now, this is one called Epsilon 3 and its moon. So this is something that comes into the show itself too. We get to see that there's something on the Epsilon 3 itself, which is definitely interesting. If not more than just interesting, it is powerful, which we will talk about a little bit later and another time. The station itself is an anneal cylinder. It's and in it being that design, it's 5 miles wide, or in Australian we call it 8 kilometers long, and about 5 miles, 1.6 kilometers in diameter. And it's the last one of its line. And the first three were all destroyed during construction, while also Babylon 4 was completed but vanished shortly after being put into operation. So this is the one that's actually lasted and gotten there too. And let's just say it's an interesting one. All right, let's talk about the cast. Now, it's an interesting cast which changes as the show goes on. Starting at the top, we've got Commander Jeffrey Sinclair, who is a returning character in other seasons and, of course, the lead character in this one, played by, of course, the late, great Michael O'Hare. Very powerful, if not, I've always thought he looks like an older brother to Christian Bale. And he's kind of got that look, you know, he's got the hair, he's got the nose. He certainly has a Batman face. And, of course, he's fantastic in this. He is a veteran of the Earth-Minbari conflict and, of course, one who was leading the Battle of the Lion, which is the last battle against the Minbari fleet, where a Minbari cruiser came up and actually got to a stage where Jeffrey, in his Star Fury, went to ram it. And, of course, as he went to ram it, he vanished. More on that at another time. Now, of course, it being, a character like this that is powerful, but also obviously he's tied in with the Minbari in terms of the war and, of course, his thoughts and stuff like that. There's a natural conflict that is there for him and the Minbari. But Michael, as an actor in this, plays, I think Jeffrey with enough military aplomb, but also a great wry and dry sense of humor at times. And he really plays well off both Claudia Christian's character and, of course, Jerry Doyle's dry wit as Michael Garibaldi, which we'll talk about soon. But the real star of this is Jeffrey Sinclair, the great commander, veteran, and, of course, the judge, jury, and sometimes executioner of justice here on the station. We've also, at a later stage, we will have John Sheridan take over, but we'll talk about that in the second season. Claudia Christian plays Lieutenant Commander Susan Ivanova. And she goes all the way through from season one to four and guest in season five. But she is the second in command of Babylon 5. She's great in this. I think she is someone that's always been a fantastic talent. But she's got bravado. She's got toughness. The character itself of Lieutenant Commander Ivanova is interesting because there's there's a backstory with the Psi-Corps, which we'll talk about here, and of course her character being a latent telepath, not a strong one, but one that at least there it goes trying to hide it being telepathic. Interesting. Jerry Doyle plays Michael Garibaldi, Chief of Security on Babylon 5. And, I'm almost lost for words, folks. But also in seasons one to four, of course, he's the head of security there too. And, he has ties to Mars, of course, as well. And in that he basically is the covert intelligence arm of Interstellar Alliance is in season five, which we get to see. Now, the great thing about it is Michael Garibaldi as a character is a crack-up. And it just comes from Jerry Doyle being, somebody that's a cynic. He was a great, when it comes to the humor itself, it's just hilarious in this. And he's fantastic. Plays off everybody really, really well. And, again, sadly, he passed on around about, 2016, if I remember right. But he was, somebody that really, I think, was the heart and pulse of the station. Mira Filan plays Delenn, the late, great Mira Filan. She's the Minbari ambassador to Babylon 5. And what's interesting is she's born Minbari, but she uses a special artifact. This is in the second season. And she becomes basically a hybrid after that. And, of course, we know that she marries later at stage Captain Sheridan, which we'll talk about when we get to season two in about a month's time. Richard Biggs, the late, great Richard Biggs, plays Dr. Stephen Franklin, Chief Medical Officer on the station itself. He is fantastic. He was always somebody that was, again, putting his heart out to patients and even those that he wanted help, but a fantastic and powerful character who goes through highs and lows in this. It's not just like your Star Trek and, other stations. Or in this case, movies and franchises. The Doctor in this actually has quite a bit to do. Stephen First as Via Cotto. And Via, of course, is diplomatic aide to Londa Mollari. Via, come on, Via. Stephen First plays it comedically, but also dramatically well. And it's a good, character. And a great actor to play off, of course, Peter Jurassic's role. Bill Mumy plays, of course, Lanier, who's, infatuated with Delenn. He's the diplomatic aide to the Minbari ambassador. But Bill Mumy, great actor, because got already a background Lost in Space, if I remember right, with Bill Mumy. And Bill's great in this, he gets martial arts, he gets to do lots of other things, but I think he's fantastic. Tracy Scoggins we'll see in, of course, season five and, of course, Lost Tales. And it was even in the recent Road Home as well. Plays, of course, Captain Elizabeth Lockley, who takes over pretty much from Sheridan. And she's also the commander following Ivanova departing the station as well. Now, in season three and four, we have, of course, Jason Carter as Marcus Cole. He's a ranger, one of the group of the agents working with the Anla Shock, and they fight against the Shadows. Of course, this is a special part of the Minbari forces, a special ops, if you like, and they handpick people to be out on the edge of the known reconnaissance groups, I guess you could call them. And again, it's kind of, like Aragorn was a Strider in Lord of the Rings, that sort of idea, but every 1,000 years, they get together to take on. And, of course, Jason Carter as Marcus Cole is just fantastic. Very Robin Hood, Errol Flynn-like at times, but fantastic. Caitlin Brown and later Mary Kay Adams both play, of course, the character of course, Natoth. And, of course, Natoth is the aide to the Narn ambassador, Jakar. And, of course, Caitlin's great. First season gets to really chew up some scenery. with, of course, Andreas Katsoulis, the late great Andreas Katsoulis, who played, of course, Jakar. And, you know, he really steals every scene he's in alone. But Caitlin Brown was able to really, in this first season, really face off well and when it comes to this stuff too. Robert Russler as Warren Keffer. That's all since season two as well. Commander of the Zeta Wing, one of course, the huge line of course, starfighters, that being, of course, the one, the only Star Fury, which we'll talk about soon as well. Now, of course, we have in later parts, Jeff Conaway playing Zachary Allen. And he was a guest in season two, but of course became a regular from third to fifth season. And of course, he played Kanicki in Grease. Patricia Tallman plays Lydia Alexander. She's a stuntwoman, amazing actress as well. She's in the original TV movie, but didn't come back until season two and three. And then also did as a main role in seasons four and five. And basically, she's one of the commercial Psycor telepaths. Now, she takes over from, of course, Andrea Thompson. Andrea Thompson played Talia Winters in seasons one and two. And, of course, she was the commercial Psycor telepath who was on board the station looking at different deals with different people, of course, to do the many different stuff that happened to be done, telling the truths, reading minds, all that sort of stuff. Had to be licensed to be able to do it. Now, Andrea Thompson was actually married to Jerry Doyle. And she left midway through season two, and mainly because she had, you know, concerns that her character wasn't getting enough screen time. Of course, J. Michael Straczynski said, well, you signed up for a character that is, you know, does this, this, and this. Can't do that, that, and that. And, of course, it would have been down the road that she would get a much larger role, but she decided to move on. And I suspect there was trouble in paradise between her and Jerry Doyle because, guess what? They then divorced as well, too, at the time. So with that, we've got, of course, Andreas Katsoulis as Jakar, as we talked about, and Peter Jurassic playing Lando Malari, the Senatory ambassador to, of course, Babylon 5. Now, there's many others. We've got Tim Choate as Zathras. Yes, Zathras does this, Zathras does that. And guess what? Zathras is back in, of course, the latest at Babylon 5 as well. Wayne Alexander played Lauren, basically an alien of unknown origin, comes to Sheridan's aid. Ardwright Chamberlain played, of course, the Vorlon ambassador in episode Babylon 5, and as Kosh, Naranek, and many others. We've got Joshua Cox as David Corwin, one of the technicians. Robin Atkin Downs as Byron, the rogue telepath, and the list goes on. We'll get into a little bit more. Of course, Walter Koenig's probably one of the more well-known ones as Alfred Bester, and definitely a better role than he had in, of course, the one, the only, yes, you know what I'm talking about, Star Trek, that's right. One of the better ones in this too, we've got, of course, Julia Nixon-Soul as Catherine Sakai, who is a basically an explorer. And, of course, Commander Sinclair's former love interest, which also becomes his current love interest. Anyway, we'll talk about many, many more as we come to those and very, very soon. But now we're going to look at some of the episodes of Season 1.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville Show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Now, I must do a personal shout-out to a dear friend of ours, of course, Norman C. Lau. Used to be, of course, on FPN, one of the founders, of course, Bloody Kings of Highlander podcast, and also somebody is working with, of course, the Roddenberrys on a new podcast series on Star Trek, of course. Mission One's over there too. And must say, huge shout out to your pal for your Zoccolo show, which, of course, gave us all the news we needed to know about, of course, Babylon 5 at the time. Another one out there too, of course, Bray 17 podcast, which you can find out there when it looks at, of course, Babylon 5 as a whole. Some great interviews on there, and guys, you do a fantastic job on your podcast. Love it. And of course, big shout out again to Norman for, of course, all this stuff and your passion, of course, for Babylon 5. All right, we're heading into the lounge now, folks, here chilling back, chucking on the TV, of course, some season one here. We're going to be going through, of course, episode by episode, just quick thoughts on what I enjoyed about these ones, and of course just some tad bits of info about what those episodes are. So episode number one was, of course, Midnight on the Firing Line. Came out on the 26th of January 1994. This is when it all kicked into gear. So this is all about the space station, of course, itself, Babylon 5, and this is where all the leaders face, of course, a potential war from a mysterious attack on a planet on Ragash 3. And, of course, this is between the Centauri and the Narn. Getting, of course, their, as always, hot little, minds to, of course, what has happened in this attack. Next one, of course, episode number two is Soul Hunter. And this is where we get the veteran actor, of course, late great Morgan Shepherd, W. Morgan Shepherd, that is, who in this one looked at, of course, being the Soul Hunter. This was a character which basically collected souls. That's it. That's as simple as it is. of course, this is one who, you know, a character which would turn up later, or at least a race, we will say, in Michael Sheen. We should say Michael Sheen. No relation. Martin Sheen played the role in one of the movies later on, River of Souls, I believe it was. And of course, the Collector of Souls itself, W. Morgan Shepherd, plays it so well in this too. Great episode, folks. That's a 5 out of 5, that one. Born to the Purple. So Londo Mollari knows where the skeletons are buried, these purple files. And this is secrets about the royal family of the Centauris. Again, any episode with Mollari and, of course, anything about the Centauri is always interesting. So definitely check that one out. Infection. Now, there's a great role here. Scientist played by, of course, the great actor David McCallum, who brings back a remnant of a living machine. So these, basically, it's about biotechnology and machines that are alive, if you like. And, of course, with this, he doesn't realize he's brought back a human that's infected, one that morphs into the perfect warrior. And, of course, this is the first episode we get, of course, with Marshall Teague, who had become Talon later. And, of course, you might know him as the bad guy from, of course, Roadhouse. It was quite a good episode. Not quite as good as the others, but pretty good. Episode 5 was Parliament of Dreams. This is about basically a religious convocation in the heavens, as they say. Centauri's decision to hold a festival of all alien faiths is a good idea. Interesting episode, not quite my favourite. Mind War, which is where we have Sinclair getting a visit from, of course, Alfred Bester, from the heads, of course, of the area for, of course, Psycor. And, of course, what's interesting about Psycor is that they can obviously see into your mind and, of course, plant suggestions and use, of course, many different ways of basically manipulation through that. But they're coming out of there because they're looking for a rogue telepath with telekinetic abilities. Not a too bad episode, but the episode is great because we get the performance, of course, of Walter Koenig. Now, we also have episode 7 written by DC Fontana from Star Trek, folks, which is called The War Prayer. This is where Babylon 5, basically there's stretches for miles from one end to the other, but there's not one inch of L on board for racism. This is where Sinclair and Garibaldi get together for a clandestine hope against Home Guard members to basically stop anti-alien operation on the station. Again, great to see Sinclair and Garibaldi always working together. They are different people, but when they come together, they can be powerful. Episode 8 is "And the Sky Full of Stars." This is when basically we get to see a little bit more about Sinclair when he blacked out, when his fighter went up against, of course, the Minbari in the war. And again, this is something that's played up in later parts. We still don't know a lot, but we know that the Minbari are watching Sinclair. Episode 9 is Deathwalker, where we have Superman 2's Sarah Douglas playing a character by the name of Jadar. And Jadar is somebody who looks like she's immortal, basically, but she's Deathwalker, one that's going around and basically sapping people that are alive and saving them of their life force and then putting it into her own race or whoever will take on, of course, those things. That being, of course, when it comes down to it, makes them powerful. Okay, jumping up to, of course, episode number 10, where we've got Believers. This is an episode pretty much about faith and medicine and basically science versus, you know, belief. And this is where Sinclair must decide something. So this is where basically the vital element of this is the neutrality that they have, or basically Franklin forms an operation to save a kid. And in this, he actually goes against the wishes of the parents, who have an ancient religion, which basically forbids the person or the partner of their race to be opened up, and they believe the soul will be contaminated and go off. And it's a very interesting episode. It's not the most exciting episode, but the dialogue that it opens in terms of science and religion is an interesting one, considering, you know, like, I think the great thing about it is the journeys that people go through in life, and particularly J. Michael Straczynski, you know, he's an atheist. So it was interesting to see his look at that too. Episode 11 was Survivors, and this is basically where Garibaldi basically gets framed for sabotage. And this is from here where the security chief himself flees and goes to down below. It's an interesting episode. We get a little bit more about Garibaldi. He's one of my favorite characters in this series. Episode 12, By Any Means Necessary. This is where Sinclair himself uses his own wisdom in this one. And basically, it's you know, the big part of him between, you know, using his wisdom in the likes of huge disputes and stuff like political and otherwise. And, of course, Jakar and Londo in this one basically find a way to continue the feud that goes through too. Always interesting. And, you know, I think the big thing about Jakar and Londo Mollari is the two of them are the centerpiece of what will become all 5 seasons of this show. Now, episode 13 is the name of the season, Signs and Portents. And this is where a mysterious group of raiders come in and attack the star grids and, of course, puts the station itself on red alert. And this is where Ivanova and the Delta Wing scramble against the action. And it's a great episode. You actually get in this a commentary by J. Michael Straczynski as well in it too. Episode 14, TKO. This is all about, of course, no rounds, no rules, and no gloves. And of course, this is about the Muay Thai. Yeah, it's an interesting episode if you're a martial artist like me, getting, you know, the alien style of blood sport in this, which is quite interesting. So we have a boxer from Earth played by Greg McKinney. And basically, this is a story about him, you know, basically putting himself up against those in the Muay Thai. There's also an interesting one as a side story in this with Ivanova and a rabbi played by Theodore Bickel. And it's an interesting one. Again, a lot of it about her ties to her late father and belief. And of course, you know, at the end of the day, facing the past and stuff like that too. Episode 15 is Grail. And this is where we have a cosmic wayfarer played by David Warner, who's looking for the Holy Grail, brings him to the station. And basically, it's an interesting one, that one, because, again, it's kind of an Indiana Jones kind of archaeological ideal, but also big, huge, you know, monster episode too, kind of. episode 16, Eyes. This is where Sinclair is, again, forced sort of, you know, into that sort of political grid, but also, you know, with intention, because in this one we have him, where an Earth Force colonel comes down and takes command of the station. This is when Sinclair is basically, you know, brought into mind of where they have, you know, he refuses, you know, one of the frontline officers is refusing to get submitted to Psycorps. Psycorps is an interesting element. Obviously, we've talked about a little bit of that before. Psycorps will be growing things through the seasons of this, of course, the telepaths and, of course, what we'll go head into, of course, the prequel part of Crusade, the spin-off series where, of course, the telepath war happens. But in this, it's interesting. We get to see, you know, obviously Alfred Bester and stuff like that too, stuff with Walter Koenig, who is, you know, again, a very good friend of Joseph Rosinski's and still is to this day. Eyes is an interesting episode, and again, Gregory Martin playing the officer in that too. We've got Legacies. So, again, this is an episode based around Delenn, of course, the Minbari as well, and, you know, they wanting to go to war again, which we go a little bit about. Again, interesting one. We've also got episode 18, Voice in the Wilderness, part one, and then also part two. And, again, this is about, of course, a certain planet that we all know about, barren and uninhabited, you know, what's happening down there. And what the station members think they're going to finally see down there, of course, Epsilon 3 has quite a big secret down there, and then, of course, some powerful weaponry down there too. Episode number 20 is Babylon Squared before B5. There was B4. Again, without going into too spoilery territory there, this is where we start to see a lot of what will become, you know, the cornerstone of this series where, you know, nothing is as it seems when it comes to these sorts of ideas. And, you know, people like Sinclair are the ones that have to really get into this too. Episode number 21, The Quality of Mercy. This is all about, of course, an alien healing machine where a former physician brings relief to those who you come in with all these different, you know, things that would usually kill a human, but the machine's able to heal it. And, of course, we get a great co-starring role. He plays a killer in this, a psychopath. That is, of course, Mark Rolston. Yes, you'll know him from some massive science fiction movies with pulse rifles. Final episode of the season is episode 22, Chrysalis. This is a New Year's Eve in space. Sinclair making marriage plans in this one too. And, of course, Earth Force gets a brand new leader. And, of course, Quadrant 37 becomes part of a non-tragedy. Delenn begins, of course, a metamorphosis as well and much, much more. So it was the end of the season, the last of Sinclair, which we didn't know about until, of course, the second season with, of course, Michael O'Hare leaving for reasons we didn't know at the time. We didn't know until the time of his death that, of course, Sinclair would not return to a lead role. Of course, that is in the universe itself. He would be, of course, heading off to, of course, the Minbari homeworld, where, of course, there he will become something else, which we'll talk about in the next season's episode. But the big thing is Michael O'Hare was somebody who was having some troubles in his personal life when it came to, of course, mental health and stuff like that. And, you know, it just got to a point where he couldn't really do the series anymore. Trouble for, you know, him was that even Dro was going to halt the series until he got some help But Michael was big enough to step away from it and say, look, no, I'm not going to hold up this show. I'll step away and let you guys go where you have to do. And, of course, Joe being Joe, he wrote the series, out like a novel. But, you know, it being a TV series, people come and go from time to time or leave permanently. And so he built in these trapdoors. And this was this offer to basically anyone that comes in that needed to go out for whatever reason, the show would still go on no matter what happened. So, again, this is an interesting volume, this season. Season one, Signs Importance. It gives us, you know, an interesting look into the series. Obviously, CGI was the big call card for this one, and certainly got better as we got towards the end of the season, and it only got better after as well. This season gets a 4.5 out of 5 on the Hallenbach scale here at the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.